Blog Talk Radio.
Something is going on. Some of us see it, some of us feel it. It's time to expand your thinking. You will need to reset everything you thought you knew about the world, about the people you trust, about history, about yourself. Let me tell you a story. For a very long time, our world has been under the growing influence of a vast transgenerational criminal mafia that was able to rise up to the highest levels of power. We didn't know because they talked and acted just like you and me. We thought we could recognize true criminals by their words and actions, but were deceived by their sophisticated speech, wealth, education, beauty, and power. Through a system of threats, blackmail, and bribery, they would come to occupy the highest levels of power in government, corporations, and education. You may know them as the Deep State or Cabal.
Usually by this point in a presidential cycle, we've got a pretty good idea what the candidates believe, and you'd think that would be especially true this year. Joe Biden has been in politics for more than half a century. This is his third run for president. Since 1969, the year of the moon landing, Joe Biden has been yammering in public virtually without stopping, until this year. This year, the famously chatty Joe Biden has said almost nothing. His advisors claim that's because of COVID-19, but nobody believes that. Everybody knows why Biden won't appear in public. When he does emerge, things tend to get strange. Biden's words take on a kind of psychedelic quality. The sentences seem to be connected, yet at the same time, they are strangely disjointed. Newspaper taxis appear on the shore. Rocking horse people eat marshmallow pies. It's mesmerizing to watch. You can almost make out the tangerine trees in the marmalade skies.
We thought in our administration we should lower the tax from the high 30s to 28%, the lower to 21. I'm going to raise it back up to 28. Folks, it's not sufficient to build back. We have to build back better. That's what my plan is, to build back better. It's bold.
These aren't somebody else's children. They're all our children. They're the children. Those children are the kite strings that hold our national ambitions aloft. The only entity, the only thing that can tear America apart is America itself. Period.
What does any of that mean? Honestly, we don't know, but Joe Biden doesn't either. It's all good, man. This is the candidate who could soon be president of the United States. Don't tell him that. It'll only make him anxious. The people around Biden, by contrast, are not anxious. They are completely in control. They know exactly what they want. And yesterday, they gave the rest of us a glimpse of what that is. The Biden campaign released a long document outlining its goals. It was written by Eric Holder, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Simone Sanders, among others. These are the people who will run the country if Joe Biden is elected in November. So what's their plan? Well, in a sentence, they'd like to make the rest of America very much like our biggest cities have become: squalid, dangerous, chaotic, and unhappy. They'd like to do to your neighborhood what they have done to New York City. The main thing they've done to New York is make it scary. Violent crime is surging dramatically there, as we have told you night after night. And one of the main reasons for that is the elimination of cash bail. The city no longer holds the people it arrests. Criminals are in and out of custody immediately, and many, of course, go on to commit more crimes. It's nuts. The Biden campaign plans to abolish cash bail everywhere. No bail for any crime nationwide. Think about what that would mean. Americans are fleeing urban areas in huge numbers. Big cities are just too mismanaged. They're too dangerous. Unless you are very rich or very poor, you're getting out. New York City lost 53,000 people in 2019. They will lose far more than that this year. Most of these refugees have relocated to the suburbs, where they imagine they are safe from the effects of disastrous urban policy. But they're not. Democrats want to abolish the suburbs. They are too clean and nice, and therefore, by definition, they are racist. And the Biden campaign has highly specific plans on how to do this. It's called Affirmatively Furthering Fair Housing. It's a HUD regulation. It was written during the Obama administration. Biden's advisors plan to enforce it. They will cut off critical federal funds for municipalities unless those municipalities submit to federal control of urban planning. Towns will be ordered to abolish zoning for single-family housing because single-family homes, needless to say, are racist. Low-income, federally subsidized apartments will go up in the suburbs. It's a good bet you won't see any of this. You won't see projects being built in Aspen or Martha's Vineyard or anywhere else Eric Holder vacations. But in your neighborhood, oh yeah. Your kids' schools will change too. The Biden campaign has vowed to bring back Obama's lunatic Title IX rules. Colleges would once again ignore due process and the presumption of innocence and instead use kangaroo courts to assess sexual assault allegations on campus. Good luck to your sons. The country's K-12 schools, meanwhile, effectively will abandon classroom discipline. Schools that suspend students based on their behavior rather than according to a strict racial quota system will be punished for that. But you will have no choice but to keep your kids enrolled anyway, because Biden's campaign pledges to abolish all programs that provide parents vouchers or tax breaks to send their kids somewhere else. And then the Biden plan gets really ambitious. It would use the Federal Reserve to fix the, quote, racial wage gap. Central bankers will be encouraged to decide if you're being paid too much based on your skin color. Sounds like a great way to unite the country. One thing the Biden administration won't enforce is immigration law. The plan promises to end workplace immigration raids. That would mean corporations could bring in effectively unlimited amounts of low-wage illegal foreign labor. Good luck finding your son a job once he's bounced out of college by those kangaroo courts. You may think this all sounds too crazy to be real. Politicians, of course, make a lot of promises right before elections, and Biden would never actually do any of this because Democrats would be worried about losing the next election if they did. These are not popular programs. But the Biden people have thought this through, and their plan answers that question. It solves the problem. It includes citizenship and voting rights for all illegal immigrants currently living in this country. That's at least 22 million people. That means 22 million brand new voters spread out across 50 states. The vast majority of them will faithfully vote for the Democratic Party. And by the way, that's not even including all the new illegal immigration we will doubtless get with reduced border controls. The Biden campaign also promises a moratorium on deportations. So there it is. That's the Biden plan. It's not really a blueprint to govern the country. It is a promise to utterly remake the country and, more to the point, never surrender control of it again.
Times it's really hard to keep track, but the new superstar at the podium is keeping them in check.
CNN's Chris Cuomo said, "Show me where it says protesters are supposed to be peaceful." Well, I point him to the First Amendment, where it says that you have the right to, quote, peaceably assemble. He should go back and read the Constitution. I think, you're asking the wrong question. The right question is, where did the data? I answered your question once, but if you ask it twice, it doesn't make it any better of a question. And did anyone take it upon themselves to pose any questions about Michael Flynn and unmasking the President Obama spokesperson? Oh, not a single journalist has posed that question. You know, I was asked probably 12 questions about the Confederate flag, and I'm a little dismayed that I didn't receive one question on the deaths that we got in this country this weekend. Not one question. I didn't receive one question about five children who were killed.
The president say to parents out there who are now going, okay, what do I do with my kids?
Yeah, the president has said unmistakably that he wants schools to open. The science should not stand in the way of this. Of course we can do it. Everyone else in the Western world, our peer nations, are doing it. The science is on our side here.
After that last exchange, CNN reporter Jim Acosta took to Twitter to take a jab at Kayleigh McEnany with this. The White House press secretary on Trump's push to reopen schools, quote, "The science should not stand in the way of this." Try again, Jim. We just saw the proof that you took her words out of context. Joining me now to set the record straight, White House Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany. All right, so Kayleigh, everybody saw what you were saying is the science is on the side of opening schools, and the science shouldn't get in the way of reopening schools because the science supports reopening schools. But then he comes out and reframes what you said to make you look bad. Do you ever just see him walking around and kind of stick a finger in his face and say, "Jim, what the hell are you doing?"
Hey, I see him around, and he's actually quite nice off camera, which is interesting. But look, it's an admission that they can't debate on the merits, Jesse. And look, this is the equivalent. If I was to say to you right now, there is no universe in which Jim Acosta engages in fake news, and you put up on your Chiron, "Jim Acosta engages in fake news," it would be the exact opposite of what I said in selective editing. But that's exactly what Jim Acosta did. It was false and it was wrong, which is why he corrected his tweets.
You know, I've heard that about Jim. I heard when the cameras go off, he's a nice guy, and then the lights come up, and he's a total maniac. A Dr. Heckle and Mr. Hyde situation. Another guy that's kind of crossing you is Jonathan Carl. Now, he runs the whole White House Correspondents Association and deal, and he's really mad, Kaylee. He's mad. He doesn't like the way you run the briefings. He wrote this really angry column in the Washington Post, and he basically says, you open these briefings like you're doing a cable news monologue, and you're really not doing your duty. You're not informing the public. What is your response to that?
Yeah, he likes to talk about the public trust in his op-ed. Well, guess what I use my briefings for? I use my briefings to highlight issues the American people care about that they don't ask about. When have they asked me about police officers dying in our streets, children dying in the streets of Democrat cities? These are Democrat cities. Two individuals who died in CHOP, the Democrat Autonomous Zone. When have they asked about this? They don't ask about it, and it's why I look over the reporters directly at the camera and speak to the American people, because these issues and these lives matter. And John Carl, if he wants to determine how he wants to run the briefing, no one's stopping him from trying to become press secretary in a future administration.
He could have been press secretary for the last administration. That would have been
right.
A better fit. Is he one of those guys that's nice when the cameras go off like Jim, or is he just mean all the time?
Hey, John's nice too. These guys, a lot of them are very nice off the camera.
All right, so it's a performance. I totally understand that. Now, you also got into it. You've been getting into it with lots of people recently, Kaylee. I guess the Chicago mayor hates you now. Her name's Lightfoot. You said, I guess she wasn't really doing her job. Let's listen to what you said.
It is unacceptable, and under this president, he'll take action, and the derelict mayor of Chicago should step up and ask for federal help, because she's doing a very poor job at securing her street.
All right, so then what did you, I think she tweeted, hey, Karen, watch your mouth.
Yeah,
Karen's supposed to be some, I guess, slang for a bossy middle-aged white woman. I don't know. You don't even look middle-aged. You look younger than that, but what's your response to the mayor of Chicago?
Yeah, my response is that I'm very upset about the violence in the streets of her city. You know, she's focused on words, but instead she should be focused on action, because, you know, right now, this weekend, what we'll see is hopefully not, but what we've routinely seen are double-digit numbers of people dying in her city. So she needs to focus on securing her streets. I understand the truth hurts. The president's written her a letter and offered her help, and she needs to take it, because it's inexcusable when children die in the Democrat-run streets of Chicago. Mayor Lightfoot,
yeah,
should be focused on that.
Lightweight, Lightfoot, whatever
Lightweight.
You want to call it. I mean, it's homicides are skyrocketing. I think they're having the deadliest year so far in 25 years.
Yeah.
So it's not
tragedy.
Good to be living in Chicago right now. So the president is pivoting to the economy after kind of a rough start to the summer. We're seeing things reopen. He's wearing a mask now. We're going to talk about masks in the next segment. And in your opinion, looking forward to August and then September, what is the White House doing in order to bring this country back to full throttle?
Yeah, a lot. Look, this is the jobs president. We're focused on phase four, which will be a great bill, assuming the Democrats come to the table, that give a tax break to middle-income Americans, lower-income Americans, the payroll tax holidays, what the president wants to see in that, and more funding for our schools to reopen. You look at the vaccine. You have one vaccine that's entering phase three trial. This president has broken down barriers and paved the way to move forward and to get through this pandemic and to restart the economy. It's a stark contrast to Democrats that want to lock our children away, keep them out of schools, and they're ignoring the science, which says it's perfectly okay to do.
Yeah, if you can get a vaccine and a tax cut within the next couple months, I think every single American would be thrilled with that news. All right, Kaylee McEnany, tangling with all sorts of characters all over the place. Stay safe out there.
Thank you, Jesse.
First, we just witnessed more blatant, malicious deception, smears, lies, besmirchment from the mob and the media. Look at this article in the New York Times. It is entitled, "A Beloved Bar Owner Was Skeptical About the Virus, Then Took a Cruise." Times columnist, well, this woman's name is Ginia Belafonte, pretty much all but accused yours truly of murder. The story featured a well-liked New York bar owner. His name was Joe Joyce, apparently an avid fan of Fox News. First, I want to stop with all my heart. I want to extend my sympathy to Mr. Joyce's friends, so well liked apparently, his family, his loved ones. And Mr. Joyce apparently was a very special person. I'm sure this is very hard on all of them and so many other people that are dealing with what the president rightly calls an invisible enemy. It is an enemy. Now, the Times claimed that because of something I said in early March, March 9th to be exact, well, Joyce decided it would be okay to take a cruise to Spain. Now, they claim he ultimately contracted coronavirus, didn't quite tie it to the cruise completely, and sadly, he passed away. Now, this is where the New York Times slander begins. In order to smear yours truly, they literally, this woman exploited a man's tragic death. She willingly, maliciously, purposefully took something I said completely out of context, and as proven by all my past statements that the New York Times was very well aware of, and it gets worse. The remarks that she used, yeah, they were from March the 9th. Again, take it out of context. It was also 8 days after Mr. Joyce embarked on his cruise. Those are the remarks she referred to in her slanderous piece. That is slander. That is libel. And forget about me in all of this. Politicizing a tragedy, this New York Times so-called writer, reporter, whatever she is, has added to the pain and suffering of a family that deserves better. This was all done to vilify this program and this channel. And that's not all. As reporter Joel Pollack of Breitbart.com and then multiple other outlets, to their credit, pointed out that when the New York Times got caught spreading the lie, in other words, whoops, they already took the cruise. We messed that up. What they did is they didn't make a correction. They didn't highlight a change. They just tried to sneak it in a stealth edit in the article. In other words, to include a more accurate timeline, considering they botched it the first time. And by the way, that completely contradicted the entire thesis of their article. A real journalist, a real newspaper would admit that they were wrong, issue an apology, issue a correction. In an interesting way, their stealth edit is nothing but an admission of their guilt and an example how they tried to cover up their smear, their slander, their lies, and everything else. Ms. Belafonte, she's a hack. She works for a disgraceful organization, the same people that lied, Russia, Russia, impeach, impeach, Ukraine, Ukraine, and Kavanaugh, Kavanaugh, same people that protected Clinton, that protected Comey, the deep state, and that never investigated the biggest abuse of power corruption scandal in history because they were too busy spreading conspiracy theories and more hoaxes. And by the way, yet another example of beyond journalist malfeasance here. They're culpable. And quietly editing the content when they are caught red-handed. And by the way, that's not where this story ends. It gets worse for them. On February 27th, 3 days before Mr. Joyce decided to go on his cruise, the same New York Times hack that tried to blame me for his death, Jinia Belafonte, she tweeted this: I fundamentally don't understand the panic. Incidence of the disease is declining in China. And by the way, the virus is not deadly in vast majority of cases. Production and so on will slow down and will obviously rebound. Okay, that is the type of behavior. By the way, same New York Times 5 or 6 days after the president put the travel ban in effect, that would be the same New York Times that said, who says it's not safe to travel to China? Bad advice there too. This is the kind of rampant hypocrisy, negligent behavior that is so widespread. This is the 99% of the mob and the media, and I call them a mob for a reason. They are nothing but state-run print, state-run TV. They are the allies of all things radical, democratic, socialist, and extremists. Tonight, their pattern of misconduct can be broken down into three categories. Let's look at one. The New York Times played down, they ignored the virus. Number two, they politicized the virus. Remember, they used it to call the president a racist with the travel ban. And they accused the president, Fox News, yours truly, this program, not taking the virus seriously enough. They were given all the evidence to the contrary. For more details, let's look at our comprehensive timeline. New York Times, January 8th, they reported, quote, there is no evidence that the new virus is readily spread by humans. Okay? Keep in mind, in January, China was involved in a massive cover-up, and the information that we were getting was full of lies, completely inaccurate. January 14th, World Health Organization, remember them? We pay those bills. Chinese authorities have found no clear evidence of human-to-human transmission. January 15th, COVID-19, well, remember, it wasn't even on Nancy Pelosi's radar. Top Democrat in the country is all smiles. She's doing the selfies, giving away pens, you know, signing off on her big impeachment stunt with commemorative everything. But only a week later, January 21st, the first case, January 21st, the first case of coronavirus in the U.S. On that very same day, even America's top expert, who I have a ton of respect for, he has spent a life, he has saved lives all throughout his career. He didn't understand it either. He was being lied to, too. Dr. Fauci said this is not a major threat to the people of the United States. January 26th, Fauci reiterated the virus is, quote, very, very low risk to the United States. I'm not attacking Dr. Fauci. He was working with Chinese lies as spread by the World Health Organization. Then, of course, I had him on my show on January 27th, 2 days later. You had people like BuzzFeed publishing a headline, don't worry about the coronavirus, worry about the flu. Oh, CNN was saying that on March the 4th. We'll get to that. January 31st, Vox tweeted, is this going to be a deadly pandemic? No. Same day, Washington Post published a piece with the headline, how our brains make coronavirus seem scarier than it is. Now, the president, he doesn't seek the advice, thankfully, from the Washington Post, the media mob, Vox, any of them, because 10 days after the first case emerged in this country, your president, President Donald J. Trump, made the boldest decision to ban travel to and from China. He declared a public health emergency. It is incalculable, incalculable, how many untold thousands of Americans did not contract this disease and untold American lives were saved. By the way, he got nothing but criticism, racism, xenophobia, fear-mongering, hysteria. This decisive action, though, 10 days after the first case, it bought us time. It saved us from an immeasurable amount of suffering. The mob and the media, they were outraged. Fake news, CNN accusing the president of using the coronavirus to spread fear and racism and xenophobia. I told you, they're just echoing quid pro quo Joe. Washington Post, early February, their headline was this, why we should be wary of an aggressive government response to coronavirus. February 4th, what was Nancy Pelosi doing? Remember, she was doing the little pre-tears. Then she could have her public, well, temper tantrum, preordained, of course, for the President's State of the Union address for the cameras. By the way, the president that night was talking about COVID-19. She was busy ripping. And get this, February 5th, your beloved New York Times, the same paper accusing me of downplaying the virus when just the opposite is true, and I will prove it, ran this headline. Who says it's not safe to travel to China? New York Times was advising you to go over to China. That was dumb. The coronavirus travel ban is unjust, they said, and doesn't work anyway. In two separate Democratic debates in February, not one candidate on stage mentioned the coronavirus. Not one. Meanwhile, New York City's health commissioner was also downplaying the threat of the virus. Take a look.
That the risk to New Yorkers for coronavirus is low and that our preparedness as a city is very high. There is no reason not to take the subway, not to take the bus, not to go out to your favorite restaurant.
Now, let's fast forward to February 24th. Now, remember, Trump put the travel ban in effect almost a month earlier. Okay, we're in the middle of a public health emergency. There's Nancy Pelosi showing up, publicity stunt, crowded streets, San Francisco's Chinatown, hugging, shaking hands with her supporters and encouraging everyone to go and socially undistance. February 26th, yep, the Times ran another unhinged op-ed entitled, Let's Call It Trump Virus. Well, this is the New York Times, it doesn't like me. If you're feeling awful, you know who to blame. In March, fake news CNN said that calling the coronavirus Wuhan or China coronavirus was racist, even though fake news Acosta himself used the exact same terminology in January. On March the 2nd, there's Mayor of New York, Conrad de Blasio, encouraging New Yorkers to go out on the town and catch a play. Same day, Governor Cuomo said, well, excuse our arrogance, but this disease will not be as bad in New York as other countries. It was worse. And on March the 4th, fake news CNN, Anderson Cooper, this is what he had to say about the virus. Let's pay attention to his timeline.
Half of the people in America do not get a flu shot, and the flu right now is far deadlier. So if you're freaked out at all about the coronavirus, you should be more concerned about the flu, and you can actually do something about it and get a flu shot.
The facts on the ground are the facts on the ground. They did change at different times. We have to concede, even with Dr. Fauci, February 29th was saying the risk is still low. March 9th, Dr. Fauci even said for healthy people they could still go on a cruise ship. But that statement never made it into this weekend's New York Times hit piece against this program. They hate all things Trump, all things conservative, and they hate Sean Hannity, likes Donald Trump, and says so on radio and TV. Neither did they watch my timeline, which, by the way, I spent an entire hour going over with one of their top-notch fake news reporters. And it's been posted on Hannity.com, I believe, since March the 18th. We had Dr. Fauci on this program as early as January 27th, discussing the serious nature of the virus. The next day, I talked to a panel of doctors. February 10th, I had Dr. Fauci back on to talk about what about these people that are asymptomatic and the spread of the disease. It's all there, Hannity. You can see it all, Hannity.com, at Sean Hannity Twitter. We've got it all there in print for all you liars, all of you involved in smear, slander, besmirchment, all of you character assassins. You can all read. You might actually learn something. We praise the president's bold action to halt travel from China. That was a game changer. This has been the biggest medical mobilization in the history of this country. Okay, everyone that needed a ventilator got a ventilator, not because any state had any of them. Hospitals were built in under a week, including the Javits Center. The Navy ships were sent. The ventilators were sent. The masks, the gowns, the gloves, the respirators, all sent. Record time. Never seen anything like it. Lives were saved. None of that made it into the fake news New York libel slander Times article. That's because the so-called journalists who work there, they're not interested in the truth. That is a fact. Instead, they care about bludgeoning enemies. For them, enemy number one is not me. That would be President Trump. Enemy number two is anybody and everybody, including voters, that support President Trump. New York Times is not alone. Look at how fake news CNN and, yes, conspiracy television, Roswell, Rachel Maddow's MSDNC, covered this serious virus over the past few weeks. Take a look in the middle of a national emergency.
Like a political moron.
The president is sounding very Baghdad Bob-like in the way that he's assigning blame to everybody but himself.
There are tens of thousands of people who will die in the country, or have some of them have already died. More are still going to die because of Donald Trump's incompetence.
Here we have a president who is exploiting a national crisis to move forward his own agenda, his own revenge, his own profit.
The president determined to rewrite the history of his early and reprehensibly irresponsible response to this virus.
But he's still acting reckless and unmoored.
Here in the United States, we are still not doing what we need to do to fight this deadly virus because of a complete lack of leadership.
Do you think there's already, do you think there is blood on the president's hands considering the slow response?
Wow. For the people you just saw this virus, yep, unfortunately, they politicized it pretty early on. One more opportunity because they got everything else wrong about Donald Trump, Russia, Ukraine, impeachment. Never investigated the biggest abuse of power corruption scandal in history that we got right, they got wrong.
Americans deserve no less for what these criminals have done. May God bless America.